some audio from the old book, Spirit Teachings, through the mediumship of William Stainton Moses, from 1873 and forward. Found online via Spiritualist Press. Introduction. The communications which form the bulk of this volume were received by the process known as automatic or passive writing. This is to be distinguished from psychography. In the former case, the psychic holds the pen or pencil, or places his hand upon the planchette, and the message is written without the conscious intervention of his mind. In the latter case, the writing is direct, or is obtained without the use of the hand of the psychic, and sometimes without the aid of pen or pencil. Automatic writing is a well-known method of communication with the invisible world of what we loosely call spirit. I use that word as the most intelligible to my readers, though I am well aware that I shall be told that I ought not to apply any such term to many of the unseen beings who communicate with Earth, of whom we hear much and often as being the relics of humanity, the shells of what once were men. It is no part of my business to enter into this moot question. My interlocutors call themselves spirits, perhaps because I so called them, and spirits they are to me for my present purposes. These messages began to be written through my hand just 10 years since, 30th of March 1873, about a year after my first introduction to spiritualism. I had had many communications before, and this method was adopted for the purpose of convenience, and also to preserve what was intended to be a connected body of teaching. The laborious method of rapping out messages was manifestly unfitted for communications such as those which I here print. If spoken through the lips of the medium in trance, they were partially lost, and it was, moreover, impossible at first to rely upon such a measure of mental passivity as would preserve them from admixture with his ideas. I procured a pocketbook, which I habitually carried about with me. I soon found that writing flowed more easily when I used a book that was permeated with the psychic aura, just as raps come more easily on a table that has been frequently used for the purpose, and as phenomena occur most readily in the medium's own room. When Slade could not get messages on a new slate, he rarely failed to get one on his own seasoned one. I am not responsible for the fact, the reason for which is sufficiently intelligible. At first the writing was very small and irregular, and it was necessary for me to write slowly and cautiously, and to watch the hand, following the lines with my eye, otherwise the message soon became incoherent, and the result was mere scribble. In a short time, however, I found that I could dispense with these precautions. The writing, while becoming more and more minute, became at the same time very regular and beautifully formed. As a specimen of calligraphy, some of the pages are exceedingly beautiful. The answers to my questions, written at the top of the page, were paragraphed, and arranged as if for the press, and the name of God was always written in capitals, and slowly, and, as it seemed, reverentially. The subject matter was always of a pure and elevated character, much of it being of personal application, intended for my own guidance and direction. I may say that throughout the whole of these written communications, extending in unbroken continuity to the year 1880, there is no flippant message, no attempt at jest, no vulgarity or incongruity, no false or misleading statement, so far as I know or could discover, nothing incompatible with the avowed object, again and again repeated, of instruction, enlightenment, and guidance by spirits fitted for the task. Judged as I should wish to be judged myself, they were what they pretended to be. Their words were words of sincerity, and of sober, serious purpose. Page 18. The earliest communications were all written in the minute characters that I have described, and were uniform in style, and in the signature, Dr. the teacher, nor have his messages ever varied during all the years that he has written. Whenever and wherever he wrote, his handwriting was unchanged, showing indeed, less change than my own does during the last decade. The tricks of style remained the same, and there was, in short, a sustained individuality throughout his messages. He is to me an entity, a personality, a being with his own idiosyncrasies and characteristics, quite as clearly defined as the human beings with whom I come in contact, if, indeed, I do not do him injustice by the broad comparison. After a time, communications came from other sources, and these were distinguished, each by its own handwriting, and by its own peculiarities of style and expression. These, once assumed, were equally invariable. I could tell at once who was writing by the mere characteristics of the calligraphy. By degrees I found that many spirits, who were unable to influence my hand themselves, sought the aid of a spirit rector, who was apparently able to write more freely, and with less strain on me, for writing by a spirit unaccustomed to the work was often incoherent, and always resulted in a serious drain upon my vital powers. They did not know how easily the reserve of force was exhausted, and I suffered proportionately. Moreover, the writing of the spirit who thus became a sort of amanuensis was fluent and easy to decipher, whereas that of many spirits was cramped, archaic in form, and frequently executed with difficulty, and almost illegible. So it came to pass, that, as a matter of ordinary course, Rector wrote, but, when a spirit came for the first time, or when it was desired to emphasize a communication, the spirit responsible for the message wrote for himself. It must not be assumed, however, that all messages proceeded from one solitary inspiration. In the case of the majority of the communications printed in this volume, this is so. The volume is the record of a period during which Imperator was alone concerned with me, though, as he never attempted writing, Rector acted as his amanuensis. At other times, and especially since that time, communications have apparently proceeded from a company of associated spirits, who have used their amanuensis for the purpose of their message. This was increasingly the case during the last 5 years that I have received these communications. The circumstances under which the messages were written were infinitely various. As a rule, it was necessary that I should be isolated, and the more passive my mind, the more easy was the communication. But I have received these messages under all sorts of conditions. At first they came with difficulty, but soon the mechanical method appeared to be mastered, and page after page was covered with matter of which the specimens contained in this book will enable the public to judge. What is now printed has been subject to revision by a method similar to that by which it was written. Originally published in the Spiritualist newspaper, the messages have been revised, but not substantially altered by those who first wrote them. When the publication in the Spiritualist was commenced, I had no sort of idea of doing what is now being done. Friends desired specimens to be published, and the selection was made without any special regard to continuity. I was governed only by a desire to avoid the publication of what was of personal interest only, and I perforce excluded much that involved allusion to those still living whom I had no right to drag into print. I disliked printing personal matter relating to myself. I had obviously no right to print that which concerned others. Some of the most striking and impressive communications have thus been excluded, and what is printed must be regarded as a mere sample of what cannot see the light now, and which must be reserved for consideration at a remote period when I and those concerned can no longer be aggrieved by its publication. It is an interesting subject for speculation where my own thoughts entered into the subject matter of the communications. I took extraordinary pains to prevent any such admixture. At first the writing was slow, and it was necessary for me to follow it with my eye, but even then the thoughts were not my thoughts. Very soon the messages assumed a character of which I had no doubt whatever that the thought was opposed to my own. But I cultivated the power of occupying my mind with other things during the time that the writing was going on, and was able to read an abstruse book, and follow out a line of close reasoning, while the message was written with unbroken regularity. Messages so written extended over many pages, and in their course there is no correction, no fault in composition, and often a sustained vigor and beauty of style. I am not, however, concerned to contend that my own mind was not utilized, or that what was thus written did not depend for its form on the mental qualifications of the medium through whom it was given. So far as I know, it is always the case that the idiosyncrasies of the medium are traceable in such communications. It is not conceivable that it should be otherwise. But it is certain that the mass of ideas conveyed to me were alien to my own opinions, were in the main opposed to my settled convictions, and moreover, that in several cases information, of which I was assuredly ignorant, clear, precise, and definite in form, susceptible of verification, and always exact, was thus conveyed to me. As at many of the seances spirits came and rapped out on the table clear and precise information about themselves, which we afterwards verified, so on repeated occasions was such information conveyed to me by this method of automatic writing. I argue from the one case to others. In one I can positively assert and prove the conveyance of information new to me. In others I equally believe that I was in communication with an external intelligence that conveyed to me thoughts other than my own. Indeed, the subject matter of many of the communications printed in this volume will, by its own inherent quality, probably lead to the same conclusion. I never could command the writing. It came unsought usually, and when I did seek it, as often as not I was unable to obtain it. A sudden impulse, coming I knew not how, led me to sit down and prepare to write. Where the messages were in regular course, I was accustomed to devote the first hour of each day to sitting for their reception. I rose early, and the beginning of the day was spent, in a room that I used for no other purpose, in what was to all intents and purposes a religious service. These writings frequently came then, but I could no means reckon on them. Other forms of spirit manifestations came too. I was rarely without some, unless ill health intervened, as it often did of late years, until the messages ceased. The particular communications which I received from the spirit known to me as Imperator, mark a distinct epoch in my life. I have noted in the course of my remarks the intense exaltation of spirit, the strenuous conflict, the intervals of peace that I have since longed for, but have seldom attained, which marked their transmission. It was a period of education in which I underwent a spiritual development that was, in its outcome, a very regeneration. I cannot hope, I do not try, to convey to others what I then experienced. But it may possibly be borne in upon the minds of some, who are not ignorant of the dispensation of the Spirit in their own inner selves, that for me the question of the beneficent action of external spirit on my own self was then finally settled. I have never since, even in the vagaries of an extremely skeptical mind, and amid much cause for questioning, ever seriously entertained a doubt. This introduction has become autobiographical in a way that is extremely distasteful to me. I can only plead that I have reason to know that the history of the pleading spirit with one struggling soul has been helpful to others. It is unfortunately necessary for me to speak of myself in order to make what follows intelligible. I regret the necessity, and acquiesce in it only from the conviction that what I record may be of use to some to whom my experiences may come home as typical. I presume that no two of us ever struggle up to light by precisely similar methods. But I believe that the needs and difficulties of individual souls have a family likeness, and it may be in the future, as I am thankful to know that it has been in the past, serviceable to some to learn by what methods I was educated. Besides this, the subject matter of these communications, and their bearing educationally on myself, the form and manner of their delivery is of infinitely small importance. It is their intrinsic claim, the end disclosed, the inherent and essential truth that they contain, which marks their value. To many they will be utterly valueless, because their truth is not truth to them. To others they will be merely curious. To some they will be as an idle tale. I do not publish them in any expectation of general acceptance. I shall be quite content that they be at the service of any who can find them helpful. March 30, 1883. Imperator's Band. This chapter taken from More Spirit Teachings. I have been wishing for some time to give you information concerning angels' ministry, how it is controlled, the way in which information is conveyed to you. Right. I find it very difficult to speak slowly. If you forget, I will impress the medium afterwards. I, myself, Imperator Servus D, am the chief of a band of 49 spirits. The presiding and controlling spirit, under whose guidance and direction the others work. I come from the seventh sphere to work out their will of the Almighty, and, when my work is complete, I shall return to those spheres of bliss from which none return again to Earth. But this will not be till the medium's work on Earth is finished, and his mission on Earth exchanged for a wider one in the spheres. Under me is my deputy and lieutenant, Rector, whose business it is to superintend in my absence, and especially to control the band of physical manifesting spirits. Associated with him is a third high spirit, who is the inspiring spirit, Doctor, the teacher. He guides the medium's thoughts, influences his words, directs his pen. Under his general superintendence there are the spirits of wisdom and knowledge, to be hereafter described. Next come the guardians whose care it is to ward off and modify the baneful influences of Earth, to drive away the hurtful, temper the painful, to shed around an influence. The inward yielding to evil can alone destroy their power. Yet again, there are two guardians whose care it is to ward off the evil influences of the spheres, the allurement of the lower spirits who would draw the medium from his allotted work and divert him from his sacred mission. These four guardians are my personal attendants, and these complete the first circle of seven, the whole band being divided into seven circles of seven spirits, each circle composed of one presiding spirit with six ministers. The first circle is composed entirely of guardians and inspiring spirits, spirits whose mission is general and concerned with the supervision of the whole band. The next circle of seven spirits is devoted to the care of love spirits of love, religion, love to God, charity, love to man, gentleness, tenderness, pity, mercy, friendship, affection, all these are in their charge. They minister to the affections, inspire feelings of gentleness and mercy, love to God, the universal Father, love to man, the common brother, tenderness for all who grieve, pity for all who suffer, desire to benefit and help all. Next comes a circle one presiding, with six spirit ministers of wisdom. Under their care is intuition, perception, reflection, impression, reasoning and the like. They preside over the intuitive faculties and the deductions made from observed facts. They inspire the medium with the spirit of wisdom and drive away influences fallacious and misguiding. They plant intuitive wisdom. Next in order is a circle which presides over knowledge of men, of things, of life, whose charge is caution and comparison, of causality and eventuality, and the like. They guide the medium's steps through the tortuous paths of earth life, and lead him to practical knowledge, complement to the intuitive wisdom, of what is beneficial and profitable. To these kindred groups, wisdom and knowledge which are under the general supervision of Doctor, the inspiring teacher succeed. A circle who preside over art, science, literature, culture, refinement, poetry, paintings, music, language. They inspire the thought with that which is noble and intellectual, and lead to words of refinement and sublimity. They incline to that which is beautiful, artistic, refined and cultured, which gives the poetic touches to the character and elevates and ennobles it. Next comes a circle of seven who have charge of mirth, wit, humor, geniality and joyous conversation. These give the lighter touches to the character, the sparkling, bright side, which is attractive in social intercourse, which enlivens the word spoken or written with flashes of wit, and relieves the somber dullness of daily toil. They are spirits attractive and genial, kindly and lovable. Last of all come the spirits who have charge of the physical manifestations, which it is thought right at present to associate with the higher message. This circle is composed principally of spirits on their probation under guardianship of Rector, Lieutenant of the Band. It is his care to teach them and to allow them, by association with the medium and his circle, to advance from a lower to a higher sphere. These are spirits who from divers causes are earthbound, and who, by the manifestations which they are permitted to work out, are purifying and elevating themselves. So you see the band divides itself into seven groups, each with its peculiar charge. Spirits of love, of wisdom and knowledge, spirits refined and noble, spirits bright and genial, who shed a ray of that light which is not of your earth on the drudgery of existence in a lower sphere, spirits whose privilege it is to progress from an inferior grade to one higher and nobler through association with you, to whom such manifestations as they furnish are yet necessary. In all these various circles there are spirits who are progressing, who are giving experience and enlightenment, who are living the medium's life, and mounting upward as he mounts, learning as they teach, and soaring as they raise him to their sphere. It is a labor of love, this guardianship of ours, a labor which brings its own reward, and blesses us, even as we bestow blessings upon the medium and, through him, upon mankind. May the Almighty Father bless you. Section I. After a conversation on this special epoch in the world's history, and its characteristics, it was written: Special efforts are being made now to spread a knowledge of progressive truth, efforts by the messengers of God, which are resisted, now as ever, by the hosts of the adversaries. The history of the world has been the story of the struggle between the evil and the good, between God and goodness on the one side, and ignorance, vice, and evil spiritual, mental, and corporeal on the other side. At certain times, of which this is one, extraordinary efforts are made. The army of the messengers of God is massed in greater force, men are influenced, knowledge is spread, and the end draws nigh. Fear for the deserters, the half-hearted, the temporizers, the merely curious. Fear for them, but fear not for the cause of God's truth. Stainton Moses, yes. But how are many doubting souls to know what is God's truth? Many look anxiously, but cannot find. None anxiously look who do not find in the end, though they may have longed to wait, yes, even till they reach a higher sphere of being. God tries all, and to those only who are fitted is advanced knowledge granted. The preparation must be complete before the step is gained. This is an unalterable law. Fitness precedes progression. Patience is required. S.M., yes. The obstacles from internal dissension, from the impossibility of bringing home evidence to many, from prejudice, from many other causes, seems almost invincible to you. Why interfere with that which is God's work? Obstacles. You know not what they are compared with what we have had to endure in times past. Had you lived on earth in the later days of Rome's imperial sway, when everything spiritual had fled in horror from a realm steeped in debauchery, sensuality, and all that is base and bad, you would have known then what the banded powers of darkness can effect. The coldness was the coldness of despair, the darkness was the gloom of the sepulchre. The body was all, and the guardians fled in dismay from a scene on which they could not gaze, and whose pangs they could not alleviate. Faithlessness there was indeed, and worse. The world scorned us and our efforts, laughed at all virtue, derided the supreme, mocked at immortality, and lived but to eat and drink and wallow in the mire the degraded, downstriken animals they had made themselves. Ah, yes. Say not that evil is invincible when the power of God and of his spirits has prevailed to cleanse even such a sink as that. More was said as to the repeated failure of plans for man's benefit through his ignorance and obstinacy. I asked if this were to be another failure. God is giving far more than you think. In all parts are springing up centers from which truth of God is being poured into longing hearts, and permeating thinking minds. There must be many to whom the gospel given of old is satisfying yet, and who are not receptive of further truth. With these we meddle not. But many there are who have learned what the past can teach, and who are thirsting for further knowledge. To these it is given in such measure as the Most High sees fit. And from them it flows to others, and the glorious tidings spread until the day comes when we shall be called on to proclaim them from the mountain top. And lo! God's hidden ones shall start up from the lowly places of the earth too. Section I. Bear witness to that which they have seen and known, and the little rills that man has heeded not shall coalesce, and the river of God's truth, omnipotent in its energy, shall flood the earth, and sweep away in its resistless course the ignorance and unbelief and folly and sin which now dismay and perplex you. S.M., this new revelation of which you speak, is it contrary to the old? Many are exercised on that point. Revelation is from God, and that which he has revealed at one time cannot contradict that which he has revealed at another, seeing that each is, in its kind, a revealing of truth, but of truth revealed in proportion to man's necessities, and in accordance with his capacities. That which seems contradictory is not in the word of God, but in the mind of man. Man was not content with the simple message. He has adulterated it with his glosses, overlaid it with his deductions and speculations. And so, as years go by, it comes to pass that what came from God is in no sense what it was. It has become contradictory, impure, and earthy. When a further revelation comes, instead of fitting it reasonably, it becomes necessary to clear away much of the superstition that has been built on the old foundations, and the work of destruction must precede the work of addition. The revelations are not contradictory, but it is necessary to destroy man's rubbish before God's truth can be revealed. Man must judge according to the light of reason that is in him. That is the ultimate standard, and the progressive soul will receive what the ignorant or prejudiced will reject. God's truth is forced on none. So for a time, during the previous processes, this must be a special revelation to a special people. It has ever been so. Did Moses obtain universal acceptance even amongst his own people? Did any of the seers? Did Jesus even? Did Paul? Did any reformer in any age, amongst any people? He offers, and they who are prepared receive the message. The ignorant and unfit reject it. It must be so, and the dissensions and differences which you deplore are but for the sifting of the false from true. They spring from unworthy causes, and are impelled by malignant spirits. You must expect annoyance, too, from the banded powers of evil. But cast your eyes beyond the present. Look to the far future, and be of good courage. S.M., touching spirit guides. How are they appointed? Spirit guides are not always attracted to those whom they direct, though this is usually the case. Sometimes they are selected for their own fitness. They are naturally apartment to teach. Sometimes they are charged with a special commission. Sometimes they are picked because they are able to supply what is wanting in the characters which they train. Sometimes they themselves select a character which they wish to mold. This is a great pleasure to the higher spirits. Sometimes they desire, for their own spiritual progress, to be attached to a soul the training which is irksome and difficult. They toil upward along with the soul. Sometimes they are attracted by pure affinity, or by the remains of earth love. Very frequently, when there is no special mission for the soul, the guides are changed as the soul progresses. S.M., who are the spirits who return to earth? Of what class? Principally those who are nearest to the earth, in the three lower spheres or states of being. They converse most readily with you. Of the higher spirits, those who are able to return are they who have what is analogous to mediumistic power on earth. We cannot tell you more than that we higher spirits find it very difficult to find a medium through whom we can communicate. Many spirits would gladly converse, but for the want of a suitable medium, and from their unwillingness to prolong their research. Section I. For one may not risk the waste of time. Hence, too, communications vary much at times. Communications which you discover to be false are not always willfully so, As time goes on, we shall know more on the conditions which affect communication. SM, you have spoken of adversaries. Who are they? The antagonistic spirits who range themselves against our mission, who strive to mar its progress by counterfeiting our influence and work, and by setting men and other spirits against us and it.